Welcome to Wines We Drink, a podcast for wine lovers and learners. I'm Charlotte Norsworthy Varnum, and together with my counterpart Keith Herndon, we'll be exploring a new wine each week. Keith is a lover of wine, and I am a learner of wine, and we hope that you'll continue learning and sipping along with us. Welcome to Wines We Drink, a podcast for wine learners and lovers. I'm Charlotte Norsworthy Varnum, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host and certified wine sommelier, Keith Herndon.
Hello, Charlotte, and hello to all of our listeners. You found us today for our seventh episode in our third season. Can you believe it?
I can't. We are moving and grooving. Last week, we reached the midpoint of our summer case of episodes, and we were in a celebratory mood, and that meant a show about sparkling wine. We had a delicious bubbly from Domaine Carneris in California's Napa Valley. If you want to check it out or any other episodes from this season or our first two seasons, you can find us on all major podcast platforms. Also, there's a complete episode guide at winesweedrink.com.
Yeah, Charlotte, if we were in a celebratory mood last week, this week we're back in education mode. Okay. How about that? You know, if you recall from our opening episode this season, I talked, briefly about some of the things that had happened since last season, mm-hmm. right? One of those was my education journey, and I earned a certification as a sherry wine specialist between our second and third seasons. So today, we're going to put that training to work as we sample some sherry.
You know, I mention often on this show how I like all of the wine trips you take because of the great selections you come back with for us to drink. So let me just add today that I also like your obsession with wine courses because I feel like I get to learn along with you.
Well, today, you and our listeners are in for a great class because we're not only opening and drinking one type of sherry, we're opening three bottles. You know, you can't begin to understand the wide range of sherry styles. There's just such a diversity there. If we only tried to do one bottle, it would not do justice to this interesting type of wine.
Well, consider my curiosity piqued, okay? And it sounds like you have a fantastic sherry journey mapped out for us today. But before we begin drinking today's selections, can you give us some background on why sherry is so complicated?
Yeah, providing a background is an excellent idea. So I'm going to start today's sherry lesson with where mine began, because I'm a relative newcomer to sherry. I mean, a few years ago, I came across a book entitled, quote, "Sherry, Maligned, Misunderstood, Magnificent." I was so intrigued by that title that I bought the book and dug right into it. And there was a question in the foreword to the book that captured my imagination. And the question went this way: how long can anything so enjoyable be out of fashion before the tide turns?
So I'm going to surmise two things then, based off of how I know your mind and how I know that it works. So first, you find sherry enjoyable. I think that that's clear. Second, the tide must be turning then for sherry, which is why we're dedicating an episode to it.
Yeah, you really do know me well. So yes to both of those observations. I enjoy sherry up and down its variety of styles. And more consumers are what I call rediscovering the magic in what is a centuries-old tradition in this wine. So I'm going to quote from that book once more. Okay, quote, "We live in an age hungry for new experiences. You have to have faith that something so old can be new, but happily every generation comes wide-eyed to the best things in life," end quote.
Well, yeah, I could see that being absolutely true as a new generation is approaching sherry for the first time, and I feel like I'm representing that today. So that's a wonderful quote, and you're telling me I'm about to experience some of life's best things.
Yes, you are. And there's very little hyperbole in that, okay? I'm being serious. Sherry has been misunderstood. It has been maligned. But I've come to enjoy its magnificence, so let's get started.
I know you're eager to get into these bottles, but to fully engage in a tasting experience, I still need to know more, I think. So let me start with the most basic of all basic questions. What is sherry?
Well, okay, I guess I should go back there. So Charlotte, that's a great question. Simply put, Sherry is a fortified wine made in southern Spain from three specific white grapes, Palomino, Muscatel, and Pedro Ximenez. But that's only the beginning of how to describe sherry, okay? A discerning drinker of sherry must understand that it comes in a variety of styles that range from bone dry, which are called fino and manzanilla, to sweet, which are known as cream and muscatel styles. And then there is a super sweet version, which comes from the Pedro Ximenez grape, and they're most often just labeled PX in name of the grape. In the middle are these wonderfully nutty styles known as Amontillado, Oloroso, and Palo Cortado.
Wow. Okay, so the word sherry really doesn't tell us anything then on its own, you know, what style of wine we are about to drink in the glass, right?
Well, it tells us that it's from southern Spain.
Okay.
Okay, right? That's there. So sherry, just the name, is mostly referring to the geographic area in southern Spain that is in and around Jerez. Okay. This is one of the cities, along with El Porto and Sanlúcar, that make up the points on what is called the Sherry Triangle. This area has hot and dry summers, offset by these wonderful influences of the Atlantic Ocean. Those wonderful influences being the breezes and the humidity. This area has a perfectly chalky limestone soil that just the Palomino grapes love. The soil retains moisture from the winter rains, and the roots grow deep and wide. So while we're talking mostly about this favorable geography, we're also talking about a specific set of strict regulations that govern what can be called sherry. Okay. For example, all sherry must be aged at least 2 years. And there are certifications that happen at 12 and 15 years. And then there are special categories recognized at 20 and 30 years. There are also rules on blending, as most sherries, as you'll see today, are non-vintage, right? Only the Oloroso style can have a vintage. One final reminder, sherry must be fortified. It's a fortified wine. And so they do that by adding a distilled high-proof grape spirit. And that brings the wines to at least 15% alcohol by volume. And many are in the 18 to 20% range.
Wow. Okay. Well then, I am now considering myself personally fortified with some sherry knowledge. Are you ready to taste this stuff?
Absolutely. Okay. And as a reminder, we're not only opening one bottle today, we're going to try three different styles of sherry. Okay. So I've arranged three glasses in front of you. The first is a Fino, the second is a Palo Cortado, and the last is a Pedro Ximenez, or PX. Right? So Charlotte, first tell our listeners what you see in terms of these very distinct colors.
I mean, they, of course, are very different. I was a little worried as he was pouring that we weren't going to be able to tell the difference. And I was like, maybe we need to arrange the bottles behind them in a way. And he's like, oh no, you're going to be able to tell. And man, you can. I mean, the colors are very distinct shades of one another. The Fino is like a yellow gold, more familiar to a white wine as these are, you know, as you would expect from the color of grapes. But the Palo Cortado is like a light amber color. And the PX is dark and rich and syrupy looking in color. I mean, the spectrum is quite varied. And for them all to be sherries, my mind is kind of blown right now.
Well, I think that you painted the picture, but allow me another moment of explanation, okay? Remember, all of the grapes here are white grapes, so that the color comes from the production style and the type of aging, okay? The Fino undergoes biological aging. It sits in its barrels underneath a layer of yeast known as flor, F-L-O-R, okay? It seals out the elements, you know, mostly oxygen, and allows the wine to maintain its golden color. Wines that do not suit the parameters for Finos or Manzanillas will be extra fortified to suspend the flor, right? And then continue the aging process through oxidation, and then you emerge with this wonderful amber color of a Palo Cortado, right? The PX was only aged in contact with air, so that deep color is largely the result of oxidation, also for a dozen years, right?
Oh, wow.
So now let's begin the tasting, okay?
Okay.
We're going to start the process, as you know, we smell and then we
sip.
And then we savor, right? The process. We've already done the seeing part, right? So we're going to start by smelling the pheno.
Okay. So I feel like we almost, this feels like we're almost conducting a science experiment in this episode, just because there are so many sherry glasses on the table here and it's like beakers are everywhere. Oh my gosh. You don't even need to stick your nose in the glass though before the aromas punch. I mean, there's definitely... wow, some herbiness to this one. It's pungent. I mean, you can, again, it's wafting through the air, not in a bad way or anything. It's just very strong in a way that I wasn't expecting. But it also, with the herbs, has a little bit of breadiness to it, maybe.
Yeah, so go in for the taste, and I'll explain that these phenos and manzanillas that have been under the floor, they're, you know, that's a yeast layer. And so naturally, it's going to have a much more of a yeasty quality, and that leads to that breadiness smell there.
Wow. Right. Yeah. And I just had that first sip, and there's definitely some acidity that hits you immediately. But also something that's pretty prominent is some saltiness. And maybe on that acidity note, some lemon, some nuttiness. I mean, that breadiness comes back, I think, in the flavor, like dead center on your tongue. There's a lot going on here.
Right.
You know, but I will say, let me say, you know, anyone who thinks sherry equals sweet, at least that's where my brain was going with this, they haven't had a pheno. This is dry.
Yeah, it's bone dry.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So great, Nail. You know, not to encourage us to go through this too quickly, but we do have a time limit on the episode, right?
Right.
So we're going to move on to the Palo Cortada. So pick that one up. This is the one that's kind of light amber in color. What aromas are you picking up for this one?
Oh, wow. A much richer aroma straight out the gate. The nuttiness is very upfront in almost a warming fashion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would go with almonds, maybe. I don't know if I had to pick a nut. But also lots of vanilla coming through as well. I think the color is also contributing to that. I'm excited to see how this one compares. So
yeah, so go in for the taste. Those aromas that you described are exactly what you would expect from this style. You know, very nutty, kind of vanilla, right? So now that you've had a taste, what are you getting?
Wow. I'm just so, I don't know. I came in completely, you know, novice to the idea of sherry. And I'm just so impressed with the richness of this sip. I mean, it's definitely, I would say, still dry, but the nuttiness is really complemented by fruit, almost like even dried fruits, right? So like plums or raisins. There's a real earthiness to this one that kind of circulates throughout your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It's delicious.
It's that nuttiness, you know, that I just so much enjoy from a Palo Cortada. You know, it's an elegant wine. It looks elegant in the glass with that amber mm-hmm. color, you know, but this one is still very much on the dry side.
Right? Right.
The nuttiness comes through, but there's not much residual sugar in this, okay? Now, we're going to really mess with your senses when we go to this last one, okay?
Oh, man. Okay.
We've had two really dry wines. We're going to go in kind of the opposite direction. So just before you pick up that PX, okay, mm-hmm. you know, let me warn you, it's just going to be very different from those first two.
Oh, man.
So take a big sniff first.
I'm a little nervous. Whoa. Oh, wow. I mean, I don't know if I've ever had a figgy pudding from the Christmas Carol, but if I had to, I would say that this is what figgy pudding smells like just in smelling this one. It's like raisin syrup, molasses, like, whoa.
Right. You know, it's good that your nose picked up on the syrup part. Now go ahead and give it that small sip.
Small sip, okay.
You don't need much of this one. Just take a small sip.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That is a sugar bomb. Woo! And it is very raisin It the whole flavor is raisins with like a hint of maple syrup at the very end, but otherwise it is really like raisin syrup.
Absolutely. You know, those flavors started as soon as the grapes were harvested. The grapes for PX, a Pedro Ximenez, are laid out in the sun after picking for about 2 weeks until they're practically raisins. And after that, the fermentation starts slowly, and then it's halted early with the fortification to maintain all those natural sugars. I've heard sherry aficionados claim that PX is the sweetest wine that you can find. It's definitely a dessert wine as opposed to the first two we tried.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my mind is just overwhelmed right now with the amount of variety. I mean, it's one thing to hear that sherry encompasses many different styles, but to actually see that represented and have tasted it, and tasting a Fino and then a few minutes later tasting a PX, it feels like the spectrum is so vast. And those flavors from A to C, I guess in this case, are essentially opposites. You know, I had no idea. I had this preconceived notion of what sherry was, and I have this small bottle of cooking sherry in my pantry and thought I knew, but now I understand that it's really not all that meets the eye.
Yeah, you know, to me, that's the beauty of sherry. It has this inherent complexity of styles and production techniques. It emanates from a very specific geographic region. It has very specific climate and soil. And all of that contributes, you know, to what the French call the terroir, mm-hmm. right? And then you layer on the centuries of tradition and the strict regulations for how sherry is made, and you just have an amazingly wonderful wine story, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Oh, right? Absolutely. I mean, the picture has been painted, and there's so much detail involved and so much complexity to unpack in the years of aging. You know, whenever I'm sipping this, I'm thinking luxury. You know, I'm thinking this has to come at a price then, right? I mean, how much can our listeners expect to pay for any of these sherry experiences?
Well, you know, that's another beautiful thing about sherry right now. I like to refer to it as an affordable luxury. The Fino you tasted was the Cruz del Mar label from the Cesar Florido bodega. And by the way, sherry makers are called bodegas, right? This typically comes in a half bottle, a 375 milliliter, and you can find that in, you know, widely for about $16.
Okay.
The next two are from the House of Lustau, which is one of the premier sherry makers. The Palo Cortado you just tasted sells for about $28 for a full 750 milliliter bottle, while the PX is just a couple of dollars more at $30.
Okay. Well, you're right then. All those prices really makes sherry an affordable luxury, like you said. I mean, how would I think about pairing the various styles of sherry with food, though? That's my next question.
Okay. Well, you know, there's a lot to consider when you're dealing with such a wide range of products. So, you know, I think you can organize your pairings based on the range of dry to sweet, okay? Those biologically aged under floor are the driest, and they work very well with salads and fresh seafood. For that, I'm talking about the Finos and the Manzanillas. And we had a Fino today, right? Those that are oxidative, such as the Amontillados or the Olorosas or the Palo Cortada, and we tasted the Palo Cortada, those are great with cold meats on the charcuterie board, right? While you would treat the PX that we had as a dessert wine. Like a port, it would also go well with blue cheese, right? Those contrasting sweet and salty, you know, are amazing. But for me, okay, for me, I like to think of this as a great pairing for sweet on sweet. The Spanish like to use PX as a sauce for vanilla ice cream, and that's what I have planned for us today.
Oh, man, this is a special treat. Wine that tastes like raisins over ice cream? This is going to be so good.
Yeah, so give it a try. Go ahead and take your wine and pour it over the ice cream that I had placed in some glasses there.
Oh, wow. An interactive experience.
You know, the raisin flavor the nuttiness, the viscosity, it all combines as a perfect topper. So what do you think?
Let's see. Whoa. Oh my goodness. Mmm. That is amazing. Just that little bit has completely transformed, you know, each of the flavors that would be independent together. It is an amazing combo.
Yeah. You know, let me remind you and our listeners not to overdo it when you're doing this as a dessert combination, because remember, this is a fortified wine. This particular PX is 17% alcohol by volume, and that alcohol isn't going to go away when you serve it as a dessert.
That's a good piece of advice. And fortified or not, I mean, this is such a wonderfully delicious dessert combination. There's a velvety texture to the PX that combines with the creaminess of the ice cream. That maple syrup note I mentioned earlier, it's a perfect complement to the vanilla in this ice cream. I mean, I am in heaven, I have to say.
Yeah. This is a great pairing in any way we look at it, right?
I completely agree. So hats off to you for this, because we are going to continue indulging while we take a short break. We'll be back soon with a show segment that we like to call The Finish. Keith is interviewing a true sherry ambassador with the House of Lestau. Welcome back to Wines We Drink. This is the portion of the show we call The Finish. Today, Keith is talking with Lucas Paya, a wine consultant who is also a brand educator in the U.S. for the House of Lestau. And in the spirit of full disclosure, he was the instructor in the Certified Sherry Wine Specialist course that Keith completed last year with the Wine Scholar Guild. So let's listen in on Keith's conversation with Lucas.
Well, thanks, Charlotte. I appreciate you kicking over to this interview. We've somewhat introduced Lucas to our audience. I'm going to just start off by asking you, Lucas, what makes sherry special to you?
That's a big question. I guess a lot of things. It's such a special region, such a historic and classic one. The wines are so unique and the quality is so high. The prices are still pretty low. The ability to pair food with, you know, the tremendous diversity that comes out of the region, endless possibilities for endless cuisines. I don't know how varied they are. I mean, we always talk about that spectrum, no? You have the driest wines in the world, you have the sweetest wines in the world, and everything in between. There are so many things that you can really... And then the nature part too, the natural sustainability, the incredible effect of the flor, right? The flor yeast that pretty much doesn't happen anywhere else at that rate. The effect of the oxidation in a controlled environment in those beautiful aging facilities. I mean, it's an endless list of things that I think make Jerez a very, very, very unique wine region, and I think uniqueness is a plus in the world of wine.
You know, that's kind of the answer I was expecting. I've never been able to ask a sherry aficionado what makes it special to them and get one answer. It's a really complicated, yeah. wonderful wine. Great. So, you know, so when we introduced you, we told our audience of the many roles that you have. So, you know, we explained you're a consultant, you're a brand ambassador with the House of Lestau, you're a wine educator. So how do you describe what you do?
As far as sherry or everything?
Just in general, you know, you have a lot of irons in the fire, as we say.
Well, I my background is he had been restaurants for a long time. I'm a sommelier, a wine buyer. So industry, trade, restaurants, hospitality, but that's all now way in the back. I stopped working in the industry as a som or as a wine director, basically, yeah, 8 years ago. Right now, it's kind of like, I don't know, promotion, sharing my passion for some regions and specific wines. That involves a lot of education, because I believe that promoting and educating goes pretty side by side in the wine world, because knowledge is what makes you enjoy, right? Happens with art, happens with music, happens with everything. When you have knowledge, you are an educated consumer, and you enjoy more. And we as promoters, we need to promote through education. It could be different levels of education, but trying to share my love for certain wines. That's what I think I try to do.
Excellent. Well, I think you talked about the complexity of sherry, and I think that is its positive point and also its negative point, right? It's positive because it is complex and it's intriguing, but it's a negative because, yeah, maybe the individual consumer just doesn't want to learn that much. So short of taking a course, how can the average consumer of wine find that entry point into sherry? What's your advice for our listener that may not want to take a formal course, but wants to know more about sherry?
That's such a good question. I think the same, and I think the Consejo Regulador at some point has been confronting themselves, saying, what direction are we taking? Are we making our region simpler, or it's actually our complexity what makes us special and unique and forceful, right? And interest. I think they're going back and forth a little bit, and I think they're now back to make it more complex. Actually, there were a few rules approved toward the end of last year that are toward making the region more complex and more styles and more grape varieties and more, you know, names and terms and things. So I don't know. It's a really good look. The hardest thing I was ever asked to do, the hardest thing was trying to explain sherry in 15 minutes.
Wow. I can understand that. Yes. I mean, we've done an entire episode, and I still don't know if we've done a good job of explaining sherry today, right?
Yeah. So if you're interested, you are a consumer, you're an aficionado, you're interested in knowing more about the region, but you are not that serious, you don't want to, you know, spend 5 hours learning about the region, I would say, like what I do with any other wine region, you buy 3 bottles that are good examples, you know, some textbook wines that represent the different styles of that wine region, and then you read a little bit about it. You look up, you know, print out some content and you taste and you read, and that will be the first step. But that's not with sherry. That's with everything.
Sure.
I mean, if you are to become an expert in Burgundy, you have a lot of work to do. So it's just a starting point. If you show interest, that if you're curious, that's the most important thing to learn about wine. And then from that point, you start saying, okay, let's create a sort of a route here. So maybe I start with a Fino, and then an Oloroso, and possibly a Pedro Ximénez. And I read about those 3 styles, and that's my starting point. And then if you think that you want to know more, there are tools, there are things that can get you there, you know.
Well, this has been an excellent conversation, Lucas. I really appreciate your time today. I'm going to say that the virtual course that I did was excellent, but I'm looking forward to my trip to Jerez. So let me know when you're there. I'll maybe meet up with you, right?
Yeah. And that's another important point here because, the pandemic was what it was. The pandemic was a problem that we all had for a long time. I also believe in the in-person classes, Heath. I think that, and you're a professor as well, right? So teaching in a physical room, like close to your students, sharing that momentum, I think it's important. And I look forward to going back to doing more in person, more physical classes and events. So that one thing. The other thing is that I'm a true believer, and I think a lot of people will agree with me that if you really want to learn about a wine region, you need to go visit it.
Yes.
And in Jerez, that's really true because there is so much unique to the region. Okay, you go to Bordeaux and then you go to Burgundy, and there's nothing to do. I mean, they're completely different too, right? But they're producing, you know, some red wines, some white wines. Jerez is a completely different profile, no? And methodology, right? So you must try to at some point go visit the region if you really think you like these particular wines because it's definitely worth the trip. So
it's high on my agenda, and I'm looking forward to going there. So hopefully we can share a nice sherry and a bodega in the very near future, Lucas.
That'd be awesome.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
What a fantastic conversation with someone who certainly enjoys his sherry. I mean, a fantastic finish for today's episode, Keith. I certainly learned a lot today, and I'm looking forward to more wine schooling next week. Before we go, Keith, can you please give our listeners some thoughts about next week's show?
Charlotte, next week we'll be drinking a luscious red blend from the south of France. And I promise you, it will not break your bank account.
Well, that's a promise then. Another wine value coming at you from Wines We Drink. Until next week, everyone.
Yes, thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Wines We Drink. Listen to our other episodes anywhere you get your podcasts. And be sure to follow us on Twitter @WinesWeDrink and on Instagram @TheWinesWeDrink. Cheers.